You're listening to Wide Men Can't Jump on the Wide Men Radio Network, located at anchor.fm/WCMJ. This is a sports podcast based that talks about NBA, football, and anything else that can come to the sports fan mind. We stick to the educated and the diehard fans, as well as the casual listener as well. Our show is brought to you by New Taylor & Associates, located at newlawoffice.com. You can also check out our wonderful sponsors, Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC, located at facebook.com/Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC. Strip Cam Fun also helps bring you this podcast, as well as our sponsors at Stay Classy Meats, where you can use promo code WIDEMEN to save 10% on your order of the freshest meat available in the United States. Now, let's take it over to our hosts. Here's Nate and Tim bringing you this week's edition of Wide Men Can't Jump. We are back. Another edition of Wide Men Can't Jump. And I'll tell you what, this one is going to be one for the books. So much to talk about. And we're going to cover about every sport you can imagine outside of midget tossing. I mean, we've got them covered from head to toe. Tonight, joining me, as always, the Canadian non-crippler, the man, the myth, the legend of Grand Prairie, the cheeseburger destroyer, the French fry fiend himself, Tim Dombrova.
That'll be Tim Housen to you.
Tim Housen, for those that don't know. And joining us, again, from way down yonder, maybe not, maybe he is near the Chattahoochee, from parts unknown, Housen, is our man, the myth, the legend, the three-man, the booth is back tonight. It's Jeff. Jeff Housen, welcome back.
Hey, I thought when you said cheeseburger crusher and French fry destroyer, those could have been either one of us, I guess.
Could have been any of us, honestly. The Prince of Poutine, I once called
him. Yeah, or what? Canadian cheese with back bacon. That would be me.
Is there such a thing as Canadian cheese?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, because most people here call American cheese the processed sliced stuff. We call that American cheese. I don't know why, because we have it here too, so I'm not really sure. Like a cheese slice you'd put on a burger that melts really good, you know, those ones. They call that up here American cheese.
Well, that's what we call it too, but is there Canadian cheese?
Well, hence, if that's American cheese, then ours must be Canadian, right?
Oh, dear God.
By virtue of... Yes, my child.
Well, then the holy cheese we eat, shouldn't that be American cheese instead of Swiss?
That's Wisconsin cheese, isn't it?
No, it's Swiss cheese.
Only if you're in Switzerland.
All right, Canadians just eat Fomunda cheese. All right, moving on here on the show. I mean, we're going to dive in. Like we said a while back, you know, we started this show as an hour basketball show, and suddenly we've morphed into more of a sports show thanks to the pandemic. I mean, yeah, we focus a lot on basketball, but really we've just started covering sports in general. And I seem to think that plays a little better, in my opinion. But we're going to cover sports tonight just from all over the place. And I know Jeff's looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. Tim's here. I don't know if he's looking forward to it, but we're going to do it anyway.
I'm looking forward to when we cover South African cockfighting.
Well, that's a dangerous sport that we have some viewership on. But... one of the first thing we need to talk about is there's been a new basketball champion of the NCAA crowned, and before we get to the Bears,
yeah.
But we're going to talk about the Final Four, and what do you guys think about this Final Four? Did you really enjoy it? I mean, there was one game that was one for the ages, and then the rest of them just kind of seemed like, yeah, you know.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Jeff. That's all right. You're prick.
Baylor-Houston game was, you know, yonder, and kind of thought that might happen. It was Houston got, I mean, I don't think they played a single digit seed till the Final Four. Is that correct? Maybe I think they beat Oregon State and beat Syracuse, and then whoever was the, I think they beat Rutgers, which was a 10 seed, and about beat them. So they hadn't been really challenged except for the Rutgers game, kind of survived that messed up region. But I tell you, were we in for a treat on Saturday night? And as you said, one for the ages, and many dubbed it already as the game of the century. I think it might be, I mean, it was a great game. Maybe there have been better games, but really if Gonzaga goes on and wins the championship, it's probably remembered more. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But still yet, back and forth, I don't think either team got ahead by more than 7 points at one time, the UCLA and the Gonzaga game. And, you know, I thought that, you know, UCLA had their chance. Everybody thought it was going to be a yawner, like the first game. But, boy, they came to play, and they got some NBA talent, Johnny Juzang, for one. And, really, I mean, I know it's easy to dissect the crucial moments of the game. I mean, I know there was missed foul shots on both sides, but really, I thought that at the end of regulation when it was tied, UCLA had a chance to win the game. I thought that instead of driving to the basket, I thought if he pulls up maybe, it probably gives him a better chance because he has a sweet pull-up jump shot. And then, of course, right after it was the charge, and it was a charge, I thought. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I thought it was a charge, and credit to Timmy, who had four fouls at the time, to pull up there and take the charge at a crucial moment. It took some berries to do that, but really when the game was tied at the end, when Juzang tied it 90-90, I thought a mistake was made by UCLA when they didn't pick up Suggs with the ball. I mean, there was 3.3 seconds left, and I mean, I know you're at the end of the game and you're thinking, well, we got to get back and make sure we got everybody and maybe not foul, but you got to at least make him dribble around from side to side. He had a clear-cut path all the way to half court, and I know the percentages for him to make that shot were low, but the quicker he got up there, the better chance he had, and he just nailed it. I mean, it looked good right from the get-go. Mark Few, I don't know how much he was lying, but he said, oh, yeah, that's in. So, anyways, it was a great basketball game, and I think being the big winner, you know, this year so far has been college basketball.
Well, I mean, Tim, what's your thoughts here?
I don't know if I want to go after that concise ESPN-type reporting.
Well, I'll say this. Jeff did make a good point on the – he did have a direct line to – you know, the half court there. And yeah, it's a tough shot, but again, you're giving it to him. And credit Gonzaga. I don't know, did they have a timeout or not?
They did have one timeout left.
Well, credit him for not using it. Because it worked. Of course, if he doesn't use it, he looks like the biggest fool in the building. But for not using it there, he caught UCLA kind of off guard and is able to run up and hit the big shot. How about UCLA, though, the 11 seed that goes from a play-in game that they probably should have lost to Michigan State all the way to the Final Four, almost to the finals? I mean, really unbelievable.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Gee, thanks for that insightful report there, Tim. Yep.
I was just trying to take it all in because I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, is it a late bloom by UCLA? Is it rising up to your competition? Because that can happen. If you're playing in a, you know, against crappy teams, sometimes it's hard to get your A game going. Then another part of me now, I've sort of kind of wondering, Gonzaga is good, but are they as good as we thought they were?
I think that's a good point, too. That's a good question. I think West Virginia gave them a good game back in December, but as we've talked about, I think we talked about in the show a few weeks ago, their conference, I mean, they went right through it. They weren't really challenged after the out of conference play, and when they played up until the Final Four, they beat everybody. They were unchallenged, really. They ran into some talent. It's possible that the game took a lot out of them Saturday night. You would think maybe that might, you could look either way. Yeah, they should be riding on a high now after that, or maybe it took, you know, the overtime game took a lot out of them. But maybe we gave them a little bit too much credit.
I kind of thought that maybe it might have opened them up a tiny bit to the fact that they weren't undefeatable, like in the sense, okay, maybe we got exposed a tiny little bit here and we could have easily lost to UCLA, but we got kind of lucky, let's call it what it was. A little bit of skill, but a little bit of luck too. And I don't know, because they weren't in the Baylor game. That game was over. It didn't take very long, and it was over.
Baylor never trailed in the championship game.
And I think it got, as close as 9 points, I think, was as
close as it
got.
Gonzaga barely got it under 10. I mean, they trailed the whole way, and Baylor just never really let up the whole game. And
you were expecting maybe Gonzaga to somewhere at some point make that run to get back in the game, and they had some foul shots that they missed, actually, when they got it to 9-10. I think it was 74-61, and they had a chance to cut it to maybe 10 or 11 there with six, seven minutes left. And a shot got blocked by Baylor. They come down on that fast break, and they bust a three, and that was game. I mean, that was it.
I mean, is this a time where we can look at the schedule Gonzaga played? Now, granted, I'll give Gonzaga credit. This year, more than any, I think they actually had booked a tougher schedule than normal. They were supposed to play, you know, Baylor earlier in the year. They did play West Virginia on short notice. Is this the year, though, that we can say, you know what, Gonzaga doesn't win because maybe they're not as battle-tested? Because, I mean, did Gonzaga really play that tough of a, you know, they play the 11 seed in the Final Four, they beat a 6 seed in the Elite Eight, a 5 seed in the Sweet 16, and then an 8 and a 16. Like, they never played anybody over a 5. Now, I know that's the way the tournament falls, but they play OU, who, granted, was not great this year. I thought Creighton was a weak 5 seed. They nearly got beat by UC Santa Barbara. USC, a 6 seed, you know, it was a 6-7 matchup. Really not much there. Then the Elite Eight, that's the Elite Eight game. Then they run into a red-hot UCLA team, and it takes a miracle shot for them to win. And then they get into the finals where they face, you know, really the main Power Five, one of the better teams in the tournament, in a Power Five conference team, and a team that's dominant, and a team that was on a roll, and they never got out of the blocks. Is it time to say that Gonzaga's conference that they're in, with their strength of schedule, is getting them into the tournament and giving them easy roads and they're still not winning just because they're not battle tested? Can we say that?
Are they the Boise State of basketball?
I mean, think about it.
They just don't really get a chance to play anybody that's all that good. So they rack up what looks nice on paper, you know, 20-0 and 25-0 and all this. I mean, they're a good team, don't get me wrong.
They're not a good team, but there's a difference between being a good team that's ready versus being a good team that has not really played enough opponents up to snuff.
Now, I think the big thing, too, that because they never really got challenged much during the year, they got nothing on the bench in Gonzaga, and I mean nothing. Like, they barely even play anybody off there. I mean, they played, I think two guys played any amount of minutes off the bench. They had a whole 7 points from their bench. So if their big guys or their starters aren't, not that they didn't play okay, But when they got behind, like they got nothing to change up their game, really. Like, what do you do? You know, we're losing by 20. What are we going to throw out there? We're going to throw some kind of a different look out there. If we got somebody who could maybe come in and maybe they hit a couple threes or something, but they don't really have that.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Gonzaga and I say, here's a team. They had scheduled tough opponents, but the schedule kind of screwed them because of COVID. Nothing they could do about that, but their non-conference schedule. I mean, their conference schedule is just, it's laughable. I mean, come on. What, St. Mary's, BYU, Pepperdine? It's a joke for this team. And we thought they were the best team in the country. I mean, I'm not trying to say that they're not, because, you know, coming in, I thought they were. But I look at the tournament bracket for the W, is that the WCC, was that the WAC or whatever the hell you want to call it?
West Coast Conference, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's Portland, Santa Clara, LMU, San Diego, San Francisco, Pepperdine, St. Mary's, Pacific, BYU, and Gonzaga. And BYU actually gave them a kind of a hell of a game there. They did, you know? So, they're not battle tested. Like, look at who Baylor had to play during the season. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Texas, Texas Tech. I mean, that was a tough conference to be in. Kansas. I mean, that's a tough conference to play in the Big 12. And
they were.
I mean, every game they played, they had to fight through adversity. And they had to battle, and they did. And I think come crunch time and when it's time to step up and win the big game, if you haven't played those games where you're tested and pushed to your limit, win, lose, or draw, you're not gonna know what it's like and what you got to do, if that makes sense.
Well, if you look at Baylor's tournament run, they pretty much handled every. I mean, they didn't really have any close games. They handled Wisconsin fine. They handled Villanova. Everybody thought Jay Wright might give them issues, and which they did. Played them pretty good for like 30 minutes, and then they pulled away. And then Arkansas, they pretty much stayed ahead of them, probably 10 to 15 points most of the way, just about like last night.
Yeah.
So those are
much tougher tests than USC, and you know, nothing against USC and teams like that, but these are tougher tests. Like Arkansas was a red hot team.
I wonder what would have happened if Gonzaga would have actually got to play Baylor. Then that game got canceled, so they didn't play.
I think it would have made Gonzaga more ready for the game, obviously, like if you actually played the team.
Or if Baylor would have whooped them by 15 or 20, would we all be talking about how great Gonzaga was? Maybe that changes the perception. Because they only beat, like, I'm looking at who they played. I mean, they beat Kansas, but that was week one. And Kansas really, I mean, they were ranked six, but they really weren't as good as that six.
Kansas didn't turn it on till the end of the year.
Right. They beat West Virginia by five. They didn't get to play Baylor. And then the only other ranked team that they played was Iowa. But that was really early on, too. So that's week, what do we got here? One, two, three. That's like about week seven or eight. So then for the next 15 weeks, they play absolute nobodies. So,
yeah,
again.
And it affects
you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how do you, first of all, no adversity. Probably not playing from behind, more than likely anyway, or at least not late in games. And so you're beating bad teams by 15 or 20 points. I don't know what that does for the character. Like, it's good to win, obviously, but somewhere along the line, you've got to face a team that kind of makes you wonder whether you can beat them or not.
Being complacent is not the way to be when it comes to playing in the NCAA tournament.
You know, I agree that they didn't play. I mean, where they're in that conference, they don't really have
And I'm not saying it's their choice, because it's not. It's not their choice. They're dealt the hand they're dealt here.
Especially this year.
They have to leave the Pac-12. But, you know, since the summer, everybody's been saying they're going to be probably the first or second best team. And they withstood that, I guess, during the whole time up until last night. But I guess that was, you know, that's something to remember. I guess if you remember something about the team. But same time, I'm like you guys. I think they got exposed just by those guard. The guard play by Baylor was great. Mitchell was great. What's the other guy that I can't remember his name right off. He played awesome as well, but I think he won most outstanding player. But Mitchell on both ends of the court, I mean, he's held on defense and can create for his teammates and shoot the three and drive the basket. But it was just, you know, we were celebrating Gonzaga being undefeated, but, you know, Baylor, I mean, they handled everybody pretty much whenever they had to play. They did during the tournament. I mean, whenever they had to turn it on, they would. So hopefully they're not a forgotten team just because they're Baylor.
Baylor only lost twice, and one of those was off of about a 6 or 7 week layoff.
Yeah.
And then they lost to Oklahoma State, I think it was.
In the tournament.
Yeah, it was in the tournament. Oklahoma State was on a roll.
Okay, so they only lost once during the year to Kansas.
So that was probably a good thing if they lost in the tournament. You know, I've seen that a lot in the last 20, 25 years, a team will lose in the tournament, or conference tournament, then they go, it could be a good wake-up call. So, kudos to...
I guess what I really took away from it was that rankings and all that are somewhat important, but they don't tell you everything. And once you get into the dance, all bets are off once the dance starts. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and again, I think we need to look at it this way. I think Gonzaga, obviously, in my opinion, they need to go to the Pac-12, even if it's just for basketball. Because, I mean, I don't even think, do they have a football team? I don't even know if they do.
If they do, they're not any good. Because I've never heard of them having one.
I don't understand how they couldn't be, how they couldn't go to the Pac-12. I guess because if they don't have a football program, I mean, that might be a reason. But, again, their basketball team's too good to be playing where they're playing, clearly. Years past... Maybe it's different, but in my opinion, I think it's time they take a move here.
Again, they maybe have to take a page out of Boise State, where they used to be content to play football against the bad teams in that neck of the woods, and they've slowly tried to put some teams on the schedule that are actually worth playing.
Didn't Boise go to a new conference?
They may have. I don't even know.
Jeff, did they happen to go to a new conference in football?
I heard there was talk that they might.
I mean, the University of Central Florida does it in the other side of the country where they got tired of, they would go undefeated and nobody cared because they weren't playing anybody.
How many times can you beat South Florida? How many times flip up on Florida A&M?
Yeah, so they started to, we can't do anything about how good or bad our conference is. So we either got to move out of the conference, which for some schools is not an option, or we've got to start playing some teams that are better than we are, or potentially better than we are, that have some national recognition so somebody knows whether we're any good or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Gonzaga needs to look at doing, in my opinion. That's
See if they got a football team or not. But.
Yeah, see if you can find that, because if they have a football team, then there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be able to shift gears and go over to the Pac-12 at this point.
Okay, they only have 16 NCAA sports. And football,
that may be an issue.
And football is not one of them.
That's probably why they're not in the Pac-12 then. I think that would be the main reason they're not in the Pac-12 is because they don't have a football team. Because that's a big deal in college sports, for sure. But you would think they would be able to change it to where, like, okay, maybe they could be in the Pac-12 in basketball or, just something. I don't know. It's just, it seems like they would do well there.
Part of that is because it's not a big school. there's only 7,500 kids going to school there. It's not, it's tiny by college university numbers.
Yeah.
Like that. That's not very many.
I think Duke has a low number too. And, you know, with Gonzaga, what they've done though, in the last 22 years, they came onto the scene in 98, 99, same coach. I mean, in this day and age to turn into a, no, they haven't won the state or they haven't won the NCAA championship, but they've been there twice in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, to build a program like that in this day and age from nothing and from in the late 90s to now, I mean, that says a lot for Gonzaga and Mark Few as well. I mean, I know just, they haven't won, but I mean, they've been there in the mix, you know.
Just for the record, Duke has twice as many students as Gonzaga. So.
Wow.
And yeah, and Duke's not a big school, which is the reason why their football program was non-existent until maybe, what, the last 5-7 years?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
I mean, they had one, but they were, that was never the focus of the school. It was always on basketball, right. And nobody cared about the football team, and they've kind of, I suppose, come out of the shadow a tiny bit. But yeah, to wrap it up, it was pretty good viewing.
Well, I think we've actually kind of overlooked Baylor here because I think they deserve some credit for how good they played.
We knew they were good, and they turned out to be good.
Yeah. Well, I do want to go on record right now of saying that the winner of the Wide Men Can't Jump bracket pool, the one, the only, Nick Hoff.
The impregnator.
No blanks, Nick Hoff. But he won the bracket pool. It was actually a tie. We had to go to the tiebreaker, which was the score between he and
Randy Orton.
It
was Randy Orton.
Randy Orton. He'll love that, by the way.
It was the legend killer.
Good Lord, don't do that.
He killed Dameron, right?
Get out of here.
Well, it wasn't Dameron. Wasn't he the king? And that was that, or did I have that wrong?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, in the pool, one of them was the Return of the King.
Oh, Larry Dameron, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
right, okay. So he
I'm caught up now. Gotcha.
Yeah, right. So there you go.
But yes, Nick Hoff with the win, and he is the winner of 820,100 Iranian reals. But he told us, and this is how great of a guy Nick is. Nick said, "Keep it for the show." And I said, you know, that's a great guy. So Nick Hoff has turned down his prize winnings. So what a guy to give up $750 like that.
I mean, yeah, we didn't disclose that the Iranian rial has had rallied.
It spiked over the past week and was worth $720 $750, and Nick turned it down. So what a guy. What a guy.
So we thought we would make a donation to the where's Nick live again?
I think in Hurricane.
Hurricane.
Yeah.
So we donated
back on that again.
Yeah, we donated a small sum in his honor to the Unwed Mothers Society in Hurricane.
Yes, and we also gave some to the local strip joint, considering he will no longer be allowed to go once this child is born.
And then as a laugh, we put $20 on the Rams.
So congratulations, Nick. We're going to try and get Nick on the show, and we'll talk to him a little bit about you know, his pick and everything. And that's one of the winners. But that'll be coming up probably within the next week or two. So congratulations, Nick. And thanks to everybody that participated in the pool. It was fun again this year. Even Jeff had a nice run.
If Jeff hadn't goofed on the other side, he'd have won it.
Yeah, I messed up, but I'm thinking of that.
Or not goofed, but if you'd have made that pick.
Came in third.
Okay, but how many points behind was he?
Oh, he was behind quite a bit.
I don't think he was.
180.
Okay, but if he picks Gonzaga to come out and get to the final, he wins.
See, I ended up in 12th. Let's see here.
I finished slightly higher.
You finished in 11th. Returning champion Matt Dombrova came in 4th. Also returning champion Larry Dameron, 7th, right in the middle of the pack. Good old Baugus came in 8th. And in last place, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host on the World View of Wrestling, Aaron Stone. Congratulations, Aaron, for coming in dead last. From first to worst, he went, because he was leading the thing there for a while.
And no offense to Aaron, because he's a good dude. But when you finish last in this bunch of guys, whoa. Whoa, dude. That ain't a good look.
Oh, buddy. But I'll tell you what we'll do now. We're going to take a quick timeout. And hey, we're going to pay some. Go ahead, Jeff.
I know you brought up UCLA earlier, and we didn't really go into detail on it. But, you know, a guy asked me Sunday, he's like, how in the world? This team's lost 10 games, and they're playing this good. I mean, was it good that it was against Gonzaga? But were they just, they lost I think they lost 4 or 5 straight games in a row at the end of the season. That's why they were in the play-in game. So kudos to them for turning it around. And it's a shame somebody had to lose that game Saturday night. You know, you don't want to say that somebody lost the game, but they did. But,
Jeff laying down the logic.
I mean, it's a shame that somebody did have to lose it. I mean,
it's kind of a shame that wasn't the final.
Right, right. I mean, you wish that would have been. And, you know, I didn't want the game. It was so good, I didn't want to see the game end. But I guess it was going to end it, you know, it's an incredible shot like that. So, anyways, kudos to them and congrats to them on a good year and double seed making it to the Final Four.
Yeah, it was cool. Cool to see
I just got
to
throw in there because the way we throw around who played who and all that stuff, UCLA played one ranked team and lost, and they never played another ranked team until the tournament.
Wow. And we're somehow able to turn.
And as you say, we're going in on a 4-game losing streak to teams that they probably shouldn't have been losing to. So that explains the number 11 play-in and all that. You know, like Baugus at a vegan retreat. You know, just doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. No sense at all in that. All right, here's what we'll do. We're going to take a quick timeout, and we're going to pay some bills with our wonderful sponsor, Stephen P. New, the New Law Office. Great people over there. We love them.
Their accounting department? Thumbs up.
Absolutely. Absolutely great. And we're going to hear from our good friends over at Strip Cam Fun. And when we come back, Jeff and I, and I think Tim will chime in, talk a little golf. What? Golf? Yes, golf. We'll be right back right after this, so stick around, and we got more to talk about on the other side.
Personal injury, product liability, workplace accidents, mesothelioma law, Social Security disability, unfair insurance practices, family law, employment discrimination, and more. All this can be handled at New Law Office with Stephen P. New. It's New Law Office with Stephen P. New. You can get your free consultation today by calling 1-800-208-9169 or 304-362-7345 for your free consultation. A new level of personal service, whether you've been injured or facing divorce or experiencing workplace discrimination, you can rely on compassionate, thorough representation from New Law Office. Be sure to contact Stephen P. New Law Office at newlawoffice.com or again get your free consultation at 1-800-203-9169. Stephen P. New, answers to your legal questions. Are you tired of the same old average everyday lifestyle and the same old job that has you making less money than what you know you're worth? Well, you should head on over to stripcamfun.com. On Strip Cam Fun, there are tons of eligible men and women waiting to perform for you, and you can join in on the fun yourself. Just head on over at stripcamfun.com where you can strip on cam and have some fun. If you get there right now, you'll get to see some of the most beautiful women, men, and whatever else your heart desires. and you can take advantage of the good times being had on stripcamfun.com. Make sure you get there right now and let them know that Wide Men Can't Jump brought you over, because stripcamfun.com is not just for everyone. Must be 18 years of older to join in on the good times. Strip Cam Fun, be sure to visit right now at stripcamfun.com, where you can strip on cam and have some fun.
And we're back, and we're going to be talking all things golf now. But again, thanks to our great sponsors, the law offices of Stephen P. New, newlawoffice.com, and also to Strip Cam Fun, another great sponsor here on the show. All right, the best weekend in golf is here. Coming up, the Masters. And I don't know about you guys, I love the Masters, always have. So, what do you think, Jeff? We'll run to you here with this one. I know you're a big Masters guy, as am I. You know, what's your thoughts as we head into the Masters this weekend?
Well, a lot of players are already saying that it's going to be a lot harder than it was in November, mainly because it's the greens are going to be a lot faster, which makes it, you know, it's like you're putting on a pool table. It's going to be, I mean, the greens were a lot softer back in November. Of course, you know, the best player in the world at the time, Dustin Johnson, set a Masters record of 20 under. So
yeah.
A lot of the players are already saying they had a practice round, I believe, today. A lot of them said, hey, this is, if he gets 20 under, he's going to be a lot better 20 under than it was last time, because it's just going to be really, really difficult. But, you know, I expect the same guys that's up there probably. I don't know if a dark horse, you never know, but a dark horse will make it interesting, but I think your Dustin Johnsons and Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. A lot of people think he's one of the favorites now. He's 10-1. He hadn't won in 4 years. He finally won last week. And if you remember, he won the Masters in 2015. And then next year, it looked like he had another sure win, but he collapsed there on the 12th hole.
He normanded it.
Yeah, he normanded it. He double normanded that one.
Yeah, really.
Ouch.
But I think Johnson's 9-1. Odds to win, so it should be interesting. It's always fun. It's a beautiful course. Be nice to go there sometime, but you're going to have dry weather, which means it's going to be a firm and fast course, so I don't think the scores will be as high as they were back in November.
Yeah, I think you're right. But now let's look at the odds to win the Masters. Dustin Johnson at 9-1, as you said, and then plus 1,100, so 11-1. Bryson DeChambeau, I believe, is
DeChambeau. He's the guy that takes the big. He can drive the ball almost, you know, 380 to 400 yards.
Is he the one that the gallery doesn't like?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's him. Isn't he? He's the one who says quite a bit and is kind of snippy with the gallery when they don't like him.
He might be. He's big on like the science of hitting golf balls and things. He's even had commercials and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, if anybody could drive a ball like that, especially at the Masters, definitely. If you remember last year, him and Johnson was the favorite to win. They were co-favorites to win, because of his U.S. Open win, DeChambeau, but you know, he didn't play well. Like, but I mean, I think Justin Thomas is somebody you need to look at too. He won the Players Championship at the Sawgrass. So, and then of course this, you know, we're not going to have Tiger due to his accident. He's, you know, I'm sure it's a bummer for a lot of people, but still yet, regardless, you know, it's always a good term. It's always seems like it's always interesting. Sunday, you never know what can happen. Golf's just a.
So what gets you in the Masters? What's the criteria for getting into this tournament?
Being white. I'm kidding.
No, because I saw Vijay Singh is in, so that's not true.
Well, before we go to that, though, just throw out a few here. Spieth's at 11 plus 1,100. Rams at plus 1,200. Thomas plus 1,200. McElroy at plus 1,800. Jason Day's at plus 5,000. I mean, there's a lot of good golfers in here. If you're going to play so that, Mickelson's at plus 12,500 for Phil Mickelson. I mean, that'd almost be worth laying a bet down on, don't you think? Phil, I mean, Phil's great. Like, you put a $5 bet down, you could win $625. I mean, that's almost worth it.
Well, if there's a tournament that he would play good at, that'll be the one. I mean, him and Tiger both could probably play that. They've done so well at it, they could play that course blindfolded almost.
Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see. But anyway, go ahead.
Tim was saying, Tim, I believe you have to be in the top 50 in the world rankings. If you've won in the past year, any tournament, you get in. When you're in. If you've won the Masters before, you're automatically in there for the rest of your life if you want to be. Like,
yeah.
If you could fail them at 75 right. or 80, hey, I don't have to be. You know, Bernhard Langer, he's 60-some years old. He, if you remember, he played pretty well. I mean, I think he finished under par last year. But of course, he plays great on the Champions Tour.
I mean, yeah, always,
yeah, go. I was just wondering because I was looking at the tee-off times, and if there was some names where that I remember from, like Sandy Lyle, and I'm going, okay, he was a pretty good golfer at one time, but geez, he's got to be in his 60s though.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah. He's a former winner, and he doesn't play it as well as Longer does, but Longer's usually.
Let's see here. We got Sandy Lyle's one. Ian Woosnam, that's another name from days gone by.
He's a winner.
Bernhard Langer, fine. You know, there isn't that many. There's a few names I didn't recognize. Abraham Anser, never heard that name before. Okay, Sergio Garcia's still there. That's probably top 50.
He's probably
and a winner.
Yeah. So.
And what is it? I think, what is it? The U.S. Open. If you've won that in the last 5 years, you can get in.
The British Open, the PGA Championship. If you won the Players Championship in the last 3 years, you're in. So I think there's usually 90 to 95 players.
Well, that explains Mike Weir's attendance at the Masters because he won it once, right?
He's a former winner, yes.
Yeah, the Masters is what? It's the smallest field in any of the majors?
Right. Yeah, it is. Usually the PGA and the U.S. Open and I think the British Open usually has 140 to 150 players. So, yeah, you're right. It's hard to get there, and it's the reason why we call it the Masters. They don't just let anybody in there.
Same with the crowd.
All right, here's the test. You guys both think you know a lot about golf. One of you probably does. What is the name of the 12th hole at Augusta?
Amen Corner?
So you don't know it?
Okay.
Did you? I didn't know this. All of the holes are named after trees.
Flowers, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
The 13th hole, I think, is Azalea. I can't remember.
That is correct, you complete and total nerd, you.
I believe 12. Do not. I'm missing that one, I guess. But
12 is golden. 12 is Golden Bell.
Yeah. That's a tough. That hole is where Tiger shot a 10 last year on the par 3.
Yeah.
That's where Jordan Spieth blew up, as we talked about in 2016 when he had a 4 or 5 stroke lead, and I think he shot like an 8 or 9 on it and faded. That whole particular hole, the wind swirls the whole time going, you know, left to right. So it's really, really difficult. That's probably one of the most difficult shots. And Nathan said Amen Corner. Well, Amen Corner is holes 11, 12, and 13. If you look on the map overhead, it's in the corner of the course. And they call it Amen Corner because if you get through 11, 12, and 13 unscathed, you say amen after you've left the 13th green. You haven't had any bogeys or, you know, bad shots or whatever. You know, you got to say amen to get any out of there.
All right. Here's a, here's
so technically, more... I wasn't wrong.
But you weren't right either.
I wasn't.
Right. How many Masters has there been?
Oh, God.
When did they start playing? I'm surprised by this answer.
Probably in the early, late 20s, early 30s, I would think. And there's been a couple World Wars, so probably 90, probably.
Yeah, you're pretty close.
Take
a shot, Nathan.
Well, if 90 is close, I'm going to go with 85.
That's very close. There's been 83.
Oh, okay.
They started in 1934. So, but as you said, there was some wars in World War II got in the way there, so that took off a couple.
There you go.
And of course, when everybody was in Shinston to see the two-on-two hardtop championships with Ed Boggs in it, nobody went that year.
Oh, why would you, right?
I don't know. What's on that thing that's got your interest so piqued?
Nothing.
It's been a long time looking at it for nothing. Doors are moving.
I was looking at a note there. Sorry.
Uh-oh, there's the Red Menace.
Yes, but all right. So, if you had to pick, who do you think is taking the Masters this weekend? I mean, we've looked at some of the odds, some of the bets. Who are we looking at here? Jeff, we'll start with you and your knowledge. What do you think?
Well, yeah, you know, I'd like to see Dustin go back to back. He hasn't played as well as he did last year, like early on, but being he knows that course like the back of his head. He got second the year Tiger won it. Then he won it last year, or the last time Tiger won. I'm sorry, Tiger's won it five times. But in 2019 he just missed it by one stroke, putting in the playoff with him. And then last year he won, so. But I'm gonna go with Justin Thomas. I believe he'll win, and not to say that Johnson can't win, of course, but just the fact that Thomas is playing real well right now. So I'm gonna predict him winning. And then a dark horse, I'm gonna go with Sung Jae Im, a South Korean. I think he can make some noise too.
Tim, do you have any thoughts or want to take a guess?
I'm gonna guess it's gonna be a guy who golfs really, really good on Sunday.
I'll tell you what, you can't get no better than that. I'm going to go.
Wild? You know, we went to the PGA Championship in 2014.
We did.
Rory McIlroy. That's his last major he's won.
Yeah, I guess he needs us to come to the Masters.
We've jinxed him.
What can you do, right? That was a fun trip. That was whenever McIlroy, Mickelson...
Ernie Els made a good Sunday charge.
He did. I think, what was it, Fowler, McIlroy, Mickelson, and another guy all teed off on 18 at the same time. Like, instead of two guys going and then the next two, they all four teed off, so they couldn't cancel because there was about to be a shitstorm roll through of rain.
Storm, and it was getting real dark.
So yeah, and we saw McIlroy sink the putt on 18 as we were walking up the hill to catch our ride back to our car.
I should have forgotten. I forgot, Nathan. I should have picked. I have to beg his apologies now. Alberta boy Corey Connors is who I should have took.
Oh, okay.
And that's who I will take. Ranked 22nd on the money list this year.
Not bad.
He might have got the top 5 or 10 last week, maybe.
That is correct. So I shouldn't overlook him. That probably just cursed him to not making a cut, but oh well.
Well, I'm taking I'm going with the momentum here. I'm taking Jordan Spieth to win. Or my dark horse, now this isn't really much of a dark horse per se, but another guy I'm taking a pick with will be, I think McIlroy may come back and make a go of it this year. I think McIlroy getting a new swing coach and things could really turn out well for him, in my opinion. I think
the only major he's never won is the Masters, so he would have the Grand Slam.
Yeah, so I think this is one that he could possibly win. That's That's where I'm going. That's my two picks there. So, a little golf talk. You know, nothing wrong with talking a little golf here.
I'd like to say hello to Greg Norman, too, if you're listening.
Yes, hello, Greg. We miss you.
Sure.
I want you to kill all our golfers on the course. Oh, I can't do that.
Can't do that. Not golfer, gopher. Oh, gopher. Yeah, I can do that.
Oh, I can get that done.
He's relatively unknown Cinderella story.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Leading the pack here at Augusta.
Oh, he got a hold of that one.
He got all of that one.
All right.
Great movie.
It really is. All right, let's shift gears here. A little bit to talk about here in the NBA as we're gearing up for what could be a nice little playoff chase here in the NBA. Some of the biggest news we got, Zion Williamson suffered a sprained thumb against the Celtics, but he didn't have serious injuries. He's not going to be out a lot, anytime really, so that was some good news for the Pelicans. The Clippers, now here's one that I thought was interesting. They're going to sign DeMarcus Boogie Cousins. And they're saying if he can clear safety protocols, he will be there. So Cousins is in L.A., starts testing protocols. He's a former teammate of Rondo, who's now with the Clippers. Patrick Patterson, they played together at Kentucky and in Sacramento. And he played with Kawhi Leonard in past All-Star games. Is it too late for Cousins to come in and make an impact here? Is this something that, you know, we're looking at? Is he too injury prone now? Is the his best years obviously are probably behind him, but is this, can he still help the Clippers here?
Will he only boogie, or will he boogie and woogie?
I hate you.
Oh, well. Do you sense my indifference?
Yes, I do.
I don't know. Why did they sign him? What's the thoughts behind that?
Well, adds, I don't add some depth to the front court. I mean, gives the Clippers another big man. And, I mean, I guess, you know, good rebounder. He's got a history of playing well. He knows a lot of the guys on the team. So, I mean, is it a terrible idea? I don't think so. They didn't give up much for him. They just signed him.
Does he have a table at Magic City by any chance?
I don't know. Lou Williams isn't there anymore. He's in Atlanta.
But that might be why they got to get Boogie if he's got one.
You might be right. But I don't see where signing Cousins hurts. I mean, granted, kind of injury prone, but if he can stay healthy and give you some, you know, good bench minutes during the playoffs, I think it's worth it.
Is there any chance that might be one of those we signed him because we think we might be able to kind of use him, but we expect that maybe somebody else probably could use him, so we'll scoop him up?
Maybe. It's one of those things, you know, hey, he won't hurt us if we use him, but he could help somebody else, so we're just going to go ahead and grab him real quick. Could be one of those.
He does have some playoff experience, so, you know, that's always good.
Went to college with Patrick Patterson, who's on the team, has played with Rajon Rondo, who's on the team, has played with Kawhi Leonard, who's on the team, knows everybody. Not like you're going to have to go through a big getting-to-know-me process. I mean, people know him. And he has experience playing in that building because he played for the Lakers for a while. He's been in California for most of his career, played in Sacramento, played for the Lakers, played for, you know, now the Clippers, and spent some time in New Orleans and Houston. So, I mean, I don't see where this is a bad signing, really. I say, hey, why not, you know?
I can think of worse ones.
Oh, me too. Did you see Andre Drummond after the Lakers signed him? He had to leave the first game in because he had a toe injury. They cannot get healthy to save their lives.
It's a weird situation going on there. I don't know what's going on there because they're free falling like crazy.
Like Tom Petty.
Oh, yeah. There's not a deep dive, but a good one.
Thank you. Yeah, they've already fallen back to fifth, and they're not looking good. They could very easily fall to sixth if the Portland Trailblazers win tonight. They've lost six of their last 10, have the Lakers, and I don't know when Davis is coming back. I don't know when LeBron is coming back. Davis may be clear already, but I mean, I'm looking at their last game here. They're playing Toronto right now. So in the game, Schroeder, Gasol, Kuzma, Morris, and Caldwell Pope.
Yeah, but look at
no
the
Braun,
look
no
at the,
Davis.
Look at the score, Nathan.
Yeah,
that just
somehow
shows
they're
you,
winning.
That just shows you how bad. Well, Toronto doesn't have Lowry. They don't have Van Fleet.
Yeah.
They got all kinds of guys hurt too, and weren't playing
like
that good anyway.
Looks like they'll win this one to kind of keep it above water. But no Drummond, no Davis, no James, and yet they're still beating the piss out of Toronto. So, you know, this is a good time to get some bench people, some playing time, but you don't want a free fall because they were the 2 seed at one point, and they're already down to the 5. So, and you know, we talked about them going from 2 to 5, 2 to 6. They're only on 8th place. They're only 4 games up on Memphis.
Wow. So what are the standings like, 1 to 8, right? Or 1 to 9, you know?
In the Western Conference.
2 playoff games, right? 2 play-in games, 7
same
for 10.
Same as the bubble.
Yeah. The Utah Jazz are the 1 seed right now. 2 is the Phoenix Suns. 3, the Clippers. 4, the Nuggets. 5, the Lakers. 6, the Trailblazers. 7 is the Mavericks. 8 is the Grizzlies. 9 is the Spurs. And 10 is the Warriors, and then followed by the Pelicans at 11. Sacramento, they're kind of far back. Then Oklahoma City, then Houston, and then, ladies and gentlemen, the Minnesota Timberwolves at the bottom of the barrel.
Okay, Nate, is this the same as what it was in the bubble? The number 7 team in the standings plays the 8 team. 9 plays 10. And then the loser of 7 and 8 play.
Yeah, basically what they'll do is whoever wins the 7-8 game gets the 7 seed.
Right.
The loser of that game will play the winner of the 9-10 seed game, and whoever wins that game gets the 8 seed.
Correct.
So basically, if you're the 8 seed, you got 2 shots to get in. Whereas if you're the 9-10 seed, you got to win 2 straight to get in.
As it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. I think it's a neat little twist on the rules there. I kind of like it. Let's jump to the East. We'll look at the standings there while we're here. Brooklyn now in the lead, and we're going to talk about Brooklyn here in a little bit. They've overtaken Philadelphia at 2. Milwaukee is 3. They're only a game back. Or is it 2 games? They're 2 games back. Excuse me. Atlanta has moved up to the 4 seed. Don't know who saw that coming at the beginning of the year. It was me. Miami is at the 5. Charlotte still at the 6. Even without LaMelo Ball, Charlotte is still making a play for a playoff spot. So I'll tip my hat to them there. At 7, the Boston Celtics, who have vastly underachieved this year, and they're at 500. The New York Knicks, who are a game under 500, are the 8 seed right now. Behind them, Indiana Pacers at 9. Chicago Bulls at 10, Toronto Raptors are the 11th seed, and with the way the play-in system is working, the Knicks are a game under 500, right? 22 and 27 are the Pacers, they're the 9, the Bulls are 21 and 28 at the 10, Toronto is 20 and 30, and they're the 11. So there's a possibility they could sneak in. Then you got Cleveland, Washington, Orlando, Detroit. And that's the East standing. So we still got a little ways to go here. Well, we're about 50. I'd say we probably got close to 20 games, less than 20 games left to go in the season. So a lot of moves can still be made.
Still time for some stuff to happen. I mean, the Knicks have got that can't happen, can it?
It very well could. Julius Randle's playing out of his mind this year.
I was pretty sure there was a law on the books that said that wasn't allowed to happen.
Well, it's happening right now. And like I said, Julius Randle's part of that reason. And you got to give credit to Tom Thibodeau. He's really kind of helped this Knicks team turn it around some.
As much as I can't stand the Knicks, It'd be good for basketball for the Knicks to be in the playoffs.
Hey, Jeff's a Knicks fan.
Well, bully for him. He also cheers for North Carolina, so what?
We don't want to say that too loud, but it would be cool if they made it back.
I think it's good for the sport.
Yeah.
The Knicks have kind of become, instead of like the evil empire that they once were, they've kind of become like this lovable loser franchise. It's like, you know, eventually they've got to win something. You know what I mean?
They've been saying that for 20 years. So.
Well, so have they in Minnesota. So, but you know how it goes.
You said it about the Cubs for a long time. So eventually, after 100 years, that happened.
It took over 100 years. Speaking of North Carolina, Tim, you brought it up. We're going to shift gears back to college here. The legendary coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Roy Williams, has retired. And Jeff, as a North Carolina man, you've been kind of quiet here in the NBA talk, so you can go ahead and take it away here.
Well, great career. You know, he started out at Kansas and had two or three teams that could have won the championship. He lost the finals to Duke in 91, and then lost to Mello and Syracuse in 03. And really, his best team, I thought, was the 97 team that had Ralph LaFriends and had Paul Pierce on it. They didn't win. They lost to Arizona, who went on to win the championship that year, with Mike Bibby in the Austin.
Before you go on, my God, Mike Bibby is a monster nowadays. Go ahead.
I haven't seen him. So,
my God. I'll tell you this. Nobody would mess with Mike Bibby right now in the NBA if he was on the court. He looked like a bruiser.
But, and then, of course, after the 03 year, Kansas lost the championship. UNC job was potentially open where they didn't make the championship. Matt Doherty had made the tournament. He was the coach. So, and he came in the 2004 team, and then in the 2005 year, they won it. He won mostly with Doherty's players except for Marvin Williams. But then he won in 09 and with a good team with Hansbrough and Wayne Ellington. And, you know, and then in 2017 he won again. But, you know, for you Duke fans out there, since he got to Carolina, he holds the edge in championships on Coach K at 3-2, even though K's got 5 overall. But great career to hire. They hired Hubert Davis, who's been an analyst for ESPN, and he's been an assistant for the last few years with Roy Williams. And then, if you remember Davis, he played for the Knicks for a while.
Yeah.
The pros, came off the bench mainly and played. And a good three-point shooter. But I think it's a good hire. He's, been in the UNC family, played there in the late 80s and early 90s. I expect good things from Hubert. He better. I don't know if he'll have a short leash or not, but give him a few years. I think we'll get some players in there, and I think he can get back to where they've been before. You know, they've struggled the last few years. They didn't make it. Even though there wasn't a tournament last year, they weren't going to make it. And then this year, I think they lost to Wisconsin. They were a 9 seed. So, I think Roy was just, he said he just had enough. And, you know, if you've been in as long as he has, I mean, you got to remember this guy was an assistant on Michael Jordan's winning team in 1982 that won it.
Yeah.
You know, under Dean Smith. So he's been around a while. You know, that's 40 plus years.
He's been there longer than I've been alive.
There you go. So great career, though. I think he's one of only a few coaches that's got, I think, over 600 or 700 wins at two different schools. It was at Kansas and at Carolina. So great career for Roy. Sadly, I think he could have won more. I think he should, with some of the talented teams he had, Kansas and maybe one or two more at Carolina. I mean, who's to say that year Villanova beats them, that they don't, on that game-winning shot, that they might win in overtime. That could have been 4, you know. So.
Yeah, and, you know, people forget about that game. That's an all-time great game, too. My God, the shot Jenkins hit to win that game for Villanova was insane, but everybody forgets about the shot that North Carolina hit, you know, before.
Tie the game.
Yeah, to tie the game. That shot was unbelievable. That was one of the, because he had to readjust himself in midair and double pump it and still sunk the shot. And it was unreal that that shot went in. And then Jenkins just comes down and ends all hope for North Carolina. But that was a great game, too. So, I mean, nothing really for Williams to be ashamed of at all. Was he the head coach there during the, I would assume he was, with the timeout game with the Fab Five?
He was not. He was a Kansas fan.
Okay.
Actually, what's odd is Carolina actually beat them in the Final Four, the semifinal game to get to the championship to beat that team from Michigan. They can't call the Fab Five because they don't exist anymore. But I'm just kidding. But anyways, and in 91, Kansas beat them in the semifinals, and that was the one of the few times that Duke and Carolina actually had a chance to meet in the championship game, but Carolina didn't follow through, and Kansas beat them in the semifinal game, which where they would go on to lose to Duke.
Yeah. Well, I know some people have said that they think Williams may have quit because of all this transport stuff, the transfer portal, because now we're seeing a lot of players now are jumping from team to team and keeping that year of eligibility, and we've basically created free agency in college basketball in a way.
Well, Cincinnati had, I think they lost six guys. Their coach was John Brannan. Correct me if I'm wrong, you might have to dig into this, but John Brannan, I believe he used to play at Marshall, if that's the same John Brannan, and he lost six players.
Yeah, I mean, WVU's lost a few. I saw Jared West transferred from Marshall.
He didn't lose his, though, necessarily. I mean, there was a reason why guys were bailing out of Cincinnati. And it wasn't a bad one either, from what I know. Isn't he the guy who laid down the plantation line and a couple other things he had said?
No, that was Creighton.
That was a guy from Creighton.
No, there was definitely something at Cincinnati. There was no surprise. Maybe it wasn't that, but he said something because his players quit on him. So I'm pretty sure that there's some type of scandal going on there.
Hmm.
But there's been there's been other schools as well. That's, as you said, it's, just things have changed. You know, you got your graduate player going to, like, the McClung kid that went to Texas Tech. He was at Georgetown. I mean, he has a graduate transfer or whatever. So, and I think he's had some health issues too, Nathan, here and there. There a couple of years ago, he passed out during a game and maybe have some blood pressure issues. I mean, kudos to him for saying, hey, it's time to go. I don't have the desire anymore. I want to live my life a little bit instead of just doing the same stuff over and over and over. I mean, Dean Smith, he went a long time. And, I mean, after he retired, he didn't get to live his life much. So, but at the same time, these guys want to do that, too. That's been their life the whole time. So,
I mean, the coach of Cincinnati has been placed on leave, so something's going on there.
Yeah, I was reading here, and it says here they don't really have any idea what's going on. Nobody's really reporting. They said there's something going on, and they're not sure what.
Well, this says the school has placed him on leave this Saturday, as it conducts an investigation into unspecified allegations. So what that might mean, who knows? But because he's on paid administrative leave right now, so something happened, or somebody accused him of something, or whatever. But this investigation comes after an external review was launched in March. That review came after six players, including four members of the recruiting class, announced that they were transferring. Not much else to say about it. So I guess until something comes out, no point in no assumptions to be made until facts come to bear. But
That's interesting. I hadn't heard anything about that. Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
It kind of sounds like the Deshaun Watson stuff, you know.
We'll be talking about him in a little later. Definitely gonna be talking about that situation.
I mean, it is extremely odd for six guys to transfer in when four of them were guys who just finished committing to come there a year ago, and now they don't want to be there anymore. Something happened, or somebody's really talking about something happening.
Right.
Yeah. So it seems. But that's Roy Williams, and I know North Carolina faithful will miss him for sure.
To finish that off,
great recruiter.
Do you think he might be the first of the kind of legendary old coaches to finally hang it up?
Yeah, I think you'll see in a few years you'll see Boeheim, you'll see Coach K, you'll see a lot of those guys start to hang it up soon.
Even your guy there, he's just about due to call it a day.
Huggy Bear's getting up there, so yep. I mean. He'll be due too.
If Coach K retires, who would you think becomes the coach? I mean, who would be the best?
Well, I don't know who'll be the best. It'll either be a former player, or whoever this, or whoever the assistant is there. Because I think you'd have to be crazy to want that job otherwise.
Yeah, for real, that'd be a tough call. You know who I honestly, if you could get him away from the team he's at now, would be good. It would be Brad Stevens.
Yeah, they were mentioning him for the UNC job as well, but
isn't
Celtics?
Isn't one of the Hurley boys? Is it Bobby or Danny? Bob. One of them was talked about when that discussion comes up.
I didn't hear that. All I heard was Davis, and I heard Stevens, and that was really the only two guys I heard. Everybody just assumed Davis would get it.
We'll get Christian Leitner as the head coach with assistant trip coach Grayson Allen.
Well, let's run through a little bit of NBA news here. Isaiah Thomas, the second one, you know.
the less good of the two.
Has that signed one. A 10-day deal with the New Orleans Pelicans, so he is back in the NBA. So good for him. The Trailblazers are signing Rondae Hollis Jefferson. So he's going to get another shot here in the league. Ben McLemore has been waived by the Houston Rockets, so they are just getting rid of people left and right in Houston.
And signed with the Lakers.
Yes, I was going to get to that. He did sign with the Lakers.
Sorry.
You two are on top of things. I tell you what, I don't even need notes for this show. Gordon Hayward will miss at least 4 weeks with a right foot sprain. So the Hornets will miss him. Again, DeMarcus Cousins signed. We saw that. Here's one that I thought was interesting. The Bucks have signed Drew Holiday to a 4-year contract extension. It's a max deal worth $160 million. They have now locked up long-term Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday on Milwaukee. So this is going to be their core that they're going to try and make a run with for the next couple of years.
And they better hope they win in the next 2 or 3 years, because if they don't, that's going to go down as, well, no, I guess they're not bad signings in of themselves, but
no, they're not.
But if they don't pan out, there's going to be an owner anyway who's probably not going to be too pleased.
I mean, I don't blame them for the signing. I mean, you traded all that stuff to get him, but I'm kind of, you know, you might as well sign him long term then. So that's what they did. They're going to try and win now.
I always get worried when guys sign the big long term max money deal that the drive kind of goes away for some of them. Because, like, okay, I'm financially set now. You can't take my money away. I don't know if I really want to put in the effort anymore.
Nah, I think these guys are competitors. Like, maybe. I mean, I get what you're saying in a way, but at the same time, I'm like,
not consciously, like, that you don't really realize. But it really takes that, you know, the one thing that might really be driving you to perform is to get that great big contract, and then once you get it,
maybe I can see it. I mean, I see where you're coming from. A couple more things here. Oklahoma City has waived Justin Jackson. Let's see. Josh Hart is expected to be out for quite a while for the Pelicans. He has a torn UCL in his right thumb, so probably won't see him for a while. There was some optimism. Andre Drummond would not miss more than a game or two with his right toe injury, so he's supposed to be coming back soon. The Thunder then signed Justin Robinson of the D-League to a 10-day contract. And TJ Leaf signed a two-way deal with Portland. Daquan Jeffries has been claimed off waivers by the Rockets. You guys did say McLemore signed by the Lakers. Malik Beasley of my Minnesota Timberwolves, he's out 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. Boy, can we catch a break or what? Devin Kennedy signed a 10-day deal with the Magic. Kevin Durant is expected to come back after missing 2 months, so he's looking to come back. And Dwayne Dedmon was signed by the Heat. Now, a couple of stories I do want to hit here. This one was kind of a big one whenever it came out. And that was Kevin Durant, while he was out, got fined $50,000 after his social media exchange with Michael Rapoport. Now, a lot of people don't like Rapoport. Totally understand that. But Durant apparently used some homophobic slurs and was said some pretty rough stuff, you know, in the public eye.
There was a couple of, what would be the word? They weren't out and out racial slurs, but they were inferred racial slurs.
Yes.
I guess you could say.
Yes, I can definitely see that. And
I don't know, man. I'm of two things about this. Part of me says, you know, you should be able to say whatever you want and you suffer the consequences, right?
Yeah.
Then another part of me says, well, you know, if you're a professional athlete or an entertainer or somebody who makes your living doing those kinds of things, you really need to be smart enough not to say that sort of stuff.
Of all the things Kevin Durant has said on a burner account, he said that on his regular account.
Well, and he didn't say it, you know, to, you know, Joe Nobody from Mississippi, you know. He said it to somebody who was clearly not going to take it.
Well, he said it to Michael Rapoport, who, like him or not, noted shit stir. So
okay, but he knew that because he even said, well, this is nothing compared to some of the stuff we say, and I'm like, Jesus, dude, like, keep digging the hole, like that's not helping your cause any. In this day and age, whether you agree with it or don't agree with it is irrelevant at this point. You can't say stuff like that anymore without getting into some type of trouble. You're going to get into some type of trouble, and he's not the first one. Look what happened to Paul Pierce. And he didn't even say anything. Yeah. Yeah,
He got fired for having a good time.
So, you know, you just...
that's pretty much what happened.
Like somebody said, there should be like an hour delay on tweets. So if you tweet it, you can go in an hour, you can go back, and it still hasn't like been published. So you can erase it when you calm down.
Well, honestly, you know what there should be? There should be something called thinking before you type.
Well.
Or there should be a job where you look at somebody and say, here's what I'm going to say. Should I say this? And they say yay or nay.
I mean, do you think, Hal McRae would like to take back that whole phone swinging incident and all that nonsense he pulled?
Probably.
But did he get fired for it?
I don't think so.
Mind you, he didn't really say anything homophobic or racial, I guess. I mean, there's been the odd time where a guy gets caught on the air saying some stuff he shouldn't say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, again, I mean, it's no different than if you're a teacher or like, okay, where you work, Nate, if you're on a radio. I mean, you just have to be aware that there's just some stuff you can't do. Yep. You can't do it and you can't say it. Yep. And that's just, I mean, at least for Kevin Durant, I mean, $50,000 is nothing. Like, I mean, he don't care about that. Like, it didn't hurt him or anything, really. So,
Any thoughts on this, Jeff? Anything at all?
We've talked the last few weeks. What Myers Leonard do, or what Kyle Larson do last year? I mean, you just got to watch what you say, man.
You have to assume that on Twitter, you know somebody's going to see it.
Absolutely.
If you do it in public,
especially if you're a celebrity.
Yeah, if you do it in public, you just have to assume that somebody's got a phone going. They're going to get audio. They're going to get video or both. It's going to happen. If you're not in your own home talking face-to-face to whoever you're talking to, you can just assume that somebody's going to hear about it. So you're just
even
better off.
Even then you can't. And even then you can't trust
Yeah, them. Ask the owner of the Clippers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Josh Allen of the Bills. I mean, he was a sophomore junior high school, and he said some racial stuff on Twitter, and it came out about a day or two before he was the draft. Okay. If you remember.
Okay, but I will draw a distinction between if you're a minor when you do these things.
What the point is, I guess people either saved that or took pictures of what he said.
People make a living of going back and scrubbing people's social media.
Oh yeah, they do.
I mean, Nate and I had the discussion off air. You know, if let's say for some reason we were okay, you're going to be on Sirius FM, we might as well save them the trouble, because there's no way if somebody could go back and look at all the things I've ever said in my life, I'm canceled immediately. I mean, there's no way around it. Everybody said stuff that they probably shouldn't have said. It's when you do it. Like, if you're 16 and you say some shit when you're in high school, that's a lot different to me than if you're a 35-year-old man and you do it on public television.
Yeah, I mean,
you know. Speaking of which, let's talk about my new hero, Charles Barkley, for a moment.
Go ahead and bring that up.
Oh, I loved every minute of that, where Charles dumped on Republicans, he dumped on Democrats, he dumped on white people, he dumped on black people, he dumped on everybody. He says, we're all nuts. Everybody needs to calm down a little bit. Most of the people in the world are pretty good, except for that 1 or 2% that are trying very, very hard to keep the rest of us not liking each other.
I mean, he ain't really wrong, though.
No, I don't think he is. It's just that he said it at halftime during a Final Four game. And you didn't see anybody try to cancel Charles Barkley, did you?
Charles Barkley don't care.
Yeah, that's why nobody bothered to try to cancel him, because there's no point.
Well, I'll tell you this. One last thing from the NBA, and then we're going to shift gears over to one thing that I want to talk about, and then we'll get into our NFL discussion. Grant Hill has been named as the successor, whatever you want to call it, of Jerry Colangelo.
The successor?
Yes, that too.
All right, okay.
I wasn't sure. Director of USA Basketball. So apparently what it is talks have been ongoing for several months on Hill taking over for Colangelo after the Tokyo Olympics. Adam Silver was a major proponent for Hill's candidacy. And for starters, Hill will be tasked with selecting the next USA coach post Greg Popovich. So I think this is Pop's last Olympics.
Well, I mean, Jerry Colangelo must be mid-70s.
He's getting up there. I don't know exactly how old he is, but he's definitely getting up
there. And he's been doing it forever. Granted, I will give him, he's been very successful at doing it. Because didn't they bring him in after the embarrassment?
Yeah, I believe so.
I believe yeah. So.
Jerry Colangelo is 81.
Okay, so he should be. If he didn't quit, they should have made him, because that's old enough. Time for somebody else to get a shot at it. I like Grant Hill. I'm not exactly sure what his credentials are necessarily, except that he was a hell of a player, so that's probably helpful.
It does help. It definitely helps.
Yeah, I don't know what his resume involves, management or any of those kinds of things, but. I'm going to assume that he'll be working with him on the Olympic stuff, and he'll get a taste without being the guy in charge. I got no problem with any of this. I think that's a pretty good deal.
Jeff, any thoughts on USA basketball?
Grant Hill, my only player I ever liked from Duke. good choice. Yeah, I mean, I think he played in the league 18, 19 years, a model citizen.
Played 2 years. Played 2 years healthy.
Yeah, was in the league for.
Had a lot of injuries and
longest career of all time.
I believe him and Jason Kidd was co-rookies of the year the 94-95 season maybe. So, anyways, good choice. I guess the biggest decision he's going to have is, you know, maybe you guys can chime in at who's going to be the coach after Popovich. Who would be a good choice? So.
Trouble with that stuff is it's not necessarily who's a good choice. It's who's willing to take the gig. Because some guys aren't. Some guys aren't. Yeah, some guys don't want it.
Honestly, you know who I feel like would get the job. I'm not saying he deserves it, but I think this would be the guy that lands it. Is Steve Kerr.
Probably.
I mean, high profile name, couple championships under his belt. I mean, let's be honest, guys. How hard do you have to coach USA basketball here?
Well, it also depends on what the makeup of the team is. If we're going with NBA players, then you probably need a different kind of coach. If you're going with college guys.
No, I mean, it's NBA coaches, obviously.
Yeah, but
It's NBA guys.
But it isn't NBA guys all the time. It's usually only NBA guys for the Olympics. Like when that's sometimes sure. There's some guys there, other times there isn't. It depends on what's going on.
That's true.
That might have something to do with it, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Pop's going to leave some pretty big shoes to fill. Not just coaching wise, but personality and all that stuff, because he's quite the guy for behind the mic. I don't know. Is there a young NBA coach out there somewhere that?
I mean, maybe Eric Spoelstra from Miami. I don't know. It just feels like Steve Kerr. That feels like a role made for him.
Brad Stevens, maybe.
Brad Stevens, yeah. Maybe. I mean, there could even be a college coach that could get involved, because Coach K was the coach for a while there. I mean, it's got to be somebody that's good with handling big personalities. And Steve Kerr has experience in that. Eric Spoelstra has experience in that. I think those would be the two guys that I would look at as my potential.
You gotta think too that you need somebody who's really flexible, because it's not like you're going to get to play all the time in some great 40,000 seat NBA style arena.
Oh, yeah.
You're gonna get to go to some places that maybe aren't got the best facilities and all that kind of stuff. You're gonna deal with some FIBA reffing that might make you lose your mind and that sort of stuff. So there's some qualities that are probably required for that job that maybe aren't required for all of coaching jobs.
Yeah.
Grant Hill seems like a pretty smart guy though. So, and I doubt he's going to do it by himself.
I don't see him doing it by himself.
Yeah. I imagine there'd be some kind of a committee deal there. So said, I've never heard a bad thing about Grant Hill ever. Nothing. Never read anything about him in the news. None of that stuff. I have to assume he's got his act together until proven otherwise, so.
Well, all right. Well, let's talk about one more thing here, and we're going to keep it brief, and we're going to try to keep it as simple as possible. Ed Bogus scolded me because we did not talk about opening day for baseball. So I'm sorry, Ed. We didn't talk about baseball, but I wanted to keep an audience awake. So... So I feel like we need to bring this up, the baseball moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta, moving it to Colorado. I'll just tell you, here's my stance on it, and I'm going to let it go with this. And this goes for all sports. I'm tired of my sports getting mixed in with politics and making decisions based on politics. I don't care what side it's for or against. I don't like it. I don't watch my sports to get caught up on what's going on in the world. Now, if you're a player, you have a right to voice your opinion like everybody else. But as an organization and a league, baseball, basketball, football, all of these leagues, I feel, if you want to point out injustice, okay, that's one thing. But when you're getting so political that you're deciding where to do games and not to do games, this is getting out of hand. Just leave it alone and let's just move on with our lives and let's stop bringing politics into sports. There's my two cents. That's all I have. That's all I say about it. And Tim, I know you could get on a soapbox and go for a month here.
I won't, but I will say this much. I have no problem with sports being involved in whatever issues they're involved in when it's an issue that they can act like. Major League Baseball is not a person. It doesn't, like, if you know what I mean, like,
yeah.
So whether you're upset about that thing or not, depending on what side of the fence you sit on, I just don't know how one guy gets to make that decision. And from what I've been reading, he kind of made it not entirely on his own, but sort of. And I don't know, the optics of it really, from what I'm seeing, aren't real good, in the sense of you took it away from a place that had a certain demographic and you moved it to another place that the demographic there is like, whoa. I mean, Colorado's about as white as it gets. That's the problem with it, regardless of how you feel about whatever side you're on. Once you pick a side in one of those things, now, not to be a hypocrite, you need to pick it in all stuff. And they got no problem dealing with China and all that other kind of stuff. And it's just not a good look, and all it did was, whatever side you're on, you're more on that side than you ever were before. Don't think it changed anybody's mind about anything. And like you said, I'm getting tired. Sports used to be something that you could sit down with anybody who liked that sport and you could watch it and enjoy it together. And now they're trying to, now that's getting tore apart. And it's just too much.
Jeff, you want to chime in here?
Sure. I agree with you guys. I remember, you know, growing up every morning watching Sports Center, and they covered sports. That's when it was fun. And now they've mixed in politics. You know, ESPN is more almost, it's got like CNN or Fox News, or it's just, you know, quit driving it down our throats. We just want to watch some sports and, as Tim said, enjoy ourselves, you know, have fun to doing this. This just isn't fun, you know. It's a double whammy for the people of Georgia. One, you know, they're getting the All-Star game taken away from them. Two, it's going to hurt the economy down there that they were expecting. The workers down there were expecting, you know, being able to.
Yeah, somebody said that a lot of them had already spent money expecting the game, and right. Now they don't get it. So, double whammy.
Yeah, I'm like you. Why can't? Is there something in place where the Braves could have appealed this? I'm sure they probably explored those avenues already, but it's a shame that they can't. Why does one, as you said, why does one person make a decision? get to make a decision like that over for everybody.
The big thing for up here was like Toronto is supposed to, I guess, is on the slate to get it in a couple of years. And somebody said, well, there's no way they can have it in Toronto now because our voting laws make the Georgia voting laws look, because we don't do half of that stuff that you guys do.
Well, at the end of the day, I think all three of us can agree. Just whatever you believe it. And baseball or any sport. Just,
they were talking about maybe taking the Masters. I mean, somebody asked the golf guys. They were like, are you crazy? This is totally separate from the Masters. Is well, here to stay. We're not moving the Masters. This is
no, but it's just that it's not when you do something to a town because of something that a state did. You cannot like what the state did. I'm okay with that. But how does punishing this? I mean, you didn't punish all of Georgia. You only punished Atlanta. Like, I just don't get it, but let's move on before we...
Well, let's move on, and let's pay some more bills here, and we'll be back on the other side. We're going to talk football, and we're going to have a little fun here. It's the NFL Trivia Bust Challenge between Tim and Jeff, so we're going to have some fun here. But first, let's pay a couple bills from our good friends at Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC, who are working on their new store. It's looking great. Michael and Leslie are doing a great job. And when they get it open, I hope we'll have a live show there once they get it going, get it open. And, of course, our good friends at Stay Classy Meats, who it's grilling season, folks. Head over to StayClassyMeats.com. Be right back.
If you're into comic books and collectibles, then you are going to want to check out Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC. They buy and sell comic books, action figures, Pop Funkos, vintage video game system, vinyl records, and other collectibles. Retro and vintage collectibles are their specialty. They have fair and competitive pricing on all their items. Their prices will make you say,
"Oh my God!"
Currently, they run on Facebook, and they're in the process of getting their own storefront in Logan, West Virginia. Give their Facebook page a like and keep updated on new merchandise and announcements for Comic Cons and store opening in your area. They do ship, but only within the United States at this time. Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC, where yesterday's memories are today's future. If you are looking for anything comic book or collectible-wise, you are going to want to do one thing.
Assemble.
And head over to Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC. Check out their Facebook page, Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC. Stay Classy Meats is your online meat market where you can get the best quality meat for competitive prices. Head on over to StayClassyMeats.com and use the promo code WIDEMEN to save 10% on your order. That's right, if you head to StayClassyMeats.com, you can save 10% on your order with promo code WIDEMEN, but that's not all. Not only will Stay Classy Meats give you 10% off, they're also throwing in a free pound of Montana grass-fed ground beef. Make sure you get over to StayClassyMeats.com right now to check out their selection. Whether it be pork, ribs, chicken, steak, bison, ribeye, or any other type of meat that you desire, you can get it at StayClassyMeats.com. They are high-quality meat that you will not want to miss out on. If you like to eat well and eat clean and eat some of the best quality product out there, Stay Classy Meats is for you. Again, head to StayClassyMeats.com right now.
Thanks to our good friends at Stay Classy Meats and Atomic Comics and Collectibles, LLC, and all of our great sponsors, New Law Office and Strip Cam Fun. We love all of you, and thank you for your support. Support our sponsors because they support us, and without them, we could not make this show possible. All right, big trade went down this week in football. It had everybody talking. Adam Schefter broke the news on Twitter the other day, and I just so happened to see it, as did everybody, I think. Sam Darnold is no longer a New York Jet. The Jets trade Sam Darnold to the Panthers for a 2021 sixth-round pick and a second-round pick, and a fourth-round picks in 2022. So, guys, there's the update there. Darnold goes to Carolina. All the Panthers gave up was a sixth, two fourths, and a second. Did they give up too much for Darnold, or do you think this is a good move?
I think a second's a lot myself, but it's a big question with Darnold. Is he a bad quarterback, or is he just bad because of the team he's on? You just wonder if that question will be answered when he gets to Carolina, and they're already talking about, even at the eighth pick, if there's a certain quarterback still there, they might even still draft one. So I guess they're just not thrilled with Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Ballgame, he does what he does, but, I mean, I don't think Carolina – I think, personally, this was a good move. I think it was good for the Panthers. I think the Panthers, you gave up a second, a couple fourths, and a sixth. I mean, yeah, you can find some guys, but you've got to find them. And, you know, even at even at your pick at 8, are you going to be able to move up and draft a quarterback, an unknown quarterback? We know quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3. Obviously, you had the trade back up, you know, into the top 6 there a couple weeks ago. Who was the team that traded back in? Help me.
The Dolphins traded.
Yes, the Dolphins. There's whispers that the Dolphins are going to trade back in and take a quarterback. You're Carolina, you're sitting there at 8. Obviously, the first 3 picks are going to be quarterbacks. Probably the asking price is too high to move up. So you make this trade and you get a quarterback who really hasn't had much of a chance due to what he's been given, the hand he's been dealt in New York. I think Sam Darnold is still an NFL quarterback, and I think he's an NFL starting quarterback. He's just been in a situation where you could have had Brett Favre, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. You could have had anybody under center for the Jets, and it was going to be bad. And he can't help that. That line is awful. He had no weapons, no help. Defense couldn't do anything. They're just a bad football team. And Darnold getting out of there, I think that's a good move for them. And the Jets, obviously, it wasn't working out. The Jets didn't want Darnold. They think they found their next guy in the draft. So whoever they get, you know, bully to them. Good luck, pal. So we'll see. Tim, what do you think? What?
No, I agree with you because we've both said several times that we figured Darnold would become a decent quarterback. It would just never be in New York. We both said that. We've said it more times than I can, you know, anytime we have the quarterback discussion. What weirds me out about the whole thing is that the Jets have steadfastly maintained that if their pick wasn't in the top 2 or 3, they'd have been happy to keep Darnold. Which doesn't make sense to me. So I don't get it. I really don't get it. They've given him nothing to help him, as you said earlier. If you can erase Sam Darnold's career at the Jets, all right, and he's available in the draft again, and we only have his college career and what we knew about him before, would you pick him?
With his, even with what he's done in New York, I still see promise there.
Okay, I do too, but I'm just saying, if we remove his NFL career and you get a chance to draft him and he comes up at your number, would you take him?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, I would. Okay. All right, so what's the difference between that? Isn't that just what, I mean, Zach Wilson is who they rumored they want. And I don't even think he's the second best quarterback in the draft.
I don't know. I mean, I've got a lot of people don't like Fields. I actually think Fields is going to do all right. Obviously, Lawrence is the cream of the crop of this class. I think Fields is going to be good. Jeff, who do you think, obviously, with Lawrence at the top, who do you think is the next best quarterback? Because there's a lot of question marks.
I think
Lance is good. I mean,
I think there's a drop off after Lawrence and. I mean, Mac Jones, he's been getting a lot of consideration. A lot of people think the 49ers are going to take him at 3 now.
I don't know why they would do that. I don't see why Mac Jones goes in the – I hate to be this guy. I don't know why he goes in the first round.
Well, he had a lot of talented players on his team. Well, granted, he had to make the throws, I guess, but my gosh, look what was surrounded him. So I mean,
he had the best line in football, Heisman Trophy wide receiver. Give me that. I go to the NFL. You know?
Right. I just don't. And the thing is, 49ers gave up three first round picks to move up to just to maybe snag him, quote unquote. So I don't know. I think after Lawrence, it's, you know, Fields, you think could be, like you said, could grow into a, and Wilson, there, they talk like he's got the best arm out of all of them. That's, I don't know. It's just, I think there's, after the quarterbacks are taken, you might have a run on them, you know, 5 out of the first 8 picks, and yeah, which means there's going to be a lot of talented players left in the pool, and then a pool from picks 9 on. So,
I feel sorry for whoever they pick, because if they don't, they got 2 years first year they'll give them, they can be bad. Year two, if they don't start winning, guess who's getting fired? The guy who picked you.
I think as a rookie, I think you get at least 3 years.
Yeah, but the GM might not get 3 years. If they don't start doing something there, they've got a good chance of having a coach.
Here's my big problem with everybody. You know, you're trading, all these guys are trading up, trying to get all these quarterbacks. When are you going to draft your line? The offensive line years ago, there were teams taking linemen early in drafts, and I don't argue with that at all.
Because when they have a draft party, Nate, and your first pick is an offensive lineman no one's heard of, nobody cheers.
I do.
Yeah, but the guys who go to draft parties don't.
Shoot, I was at the – I remember Tristan when we drafted Wirfs. Tristan Wirfs in the second round, I about did a cartwheel. I was like, finally, a lineman.
It's become – like, I kind of wonder, too, why didn't they take Darnold and their pick – and trade it for a guy who's played for a few years and is good.
I don't know if
anybody was available, but I mean that makes more sense than we just proved in the last 2.5-3 years that we couldn't turn this guy who we thought was the greatest quarterback ever, according to them anyway. We couldn't do anything with him, so we're going to kick him to the curb and we're going to start with another guy that we think might be the greatest quarterback in the world.
Yeah,
and we haven't done a damn thing to the team in between there. That seems like a recipe for not turning out that well.
Yeah, it really does. It does. I can't figure it out.
There's rumors today that Atlanta may trade out of the fourth pick. So you could potentially have the top four picks pick quarterbacks. I don't think that's ever happened. But the top four picks could very well be quarterbacks. And I believe they project Cincinnati to take the offensive tackle from Oregon, I believe. I think that's where he's from. So,
well, guys, we look at that trade. Let's now, and we're talking draft, let's get down to our little trivia session here. And we'll go and talk NFL busts, because there's a lot of busts out there. You know what I mean? But, yes, there's a lot of busts, and this is just a little trivia quiz. And, again, we're sticking to, you know, skill positions. I'm not going to break out like here's a guy here, offensive tackle Tony Meredith, number 2 overall by the Packers in 1989.
Tony Mandrich, you mean?
Yeah, Tony Mandrich, excuse me. Okay. Here's the players that were drafted around him: Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders.
Four Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and he and there he is. But I'm not going to pull out offensive lineman names. I'm not going to throw out linebacker names or anything like that.
That's too bad, because I knew who he was.
Yeah, I'd never heard that name until earlier.
Well, they actually had a on what's outside the lines. They had a show on him, and at the Rose Bowl that year, I think he had a catheter. He had to take a urine test to see if he was on.
Yeah.
Drugs or whatever, and he had a catheter. That's how he pissed in the cup or whatever, and he already had pee there. So,
yeah.
I mean, he had I think he won offensive lineman of the year, if I'm not mistaken, right, Tim? Maybe I'm not.
I think so. Sure. I mean, he did okay for a little while, and then he went right down the toilet. But go ahead, Nate.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Who's going to start here? Who are we going with?
Well, let's just go with Jeff, and then we'll stick with him as he continues to get them right.
All right. Well, let's see here. We're going to start with Jeff. So, all right, Jeff, this guy was a Heisman runner-up out of Tennessee. He had a long holdout and was taken by the Washington, at the time, Redskins in 1994. Who is this draft bust? Also, you need the
Heath
position?
Shuler.
You are correct. It is Heath Shuler. Heath Shuler out of Tennessee.
Well, I can see I'll just turn my mic off. And
correct, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know any of that stuff. What a waste of time for me.
We can just take turns.
Well, I think I'll just chime in if you don't know. I'll just help. How's that?
Okay.
All right. Let's look here at another one here. That one's
too easy. I think he ended up being a state senator in Tennessee.
He did, in North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina, I'm sorry.
All right. Alabama sent this running back to the Cleveland Browns, number 3 overall in 2012.
Trent Richardson.
Yes, Trent Richardson is correct. That is correct. Jeff again.
Probably the biggest bust in history, some people think.
He's one of them. He was bad, folks. He was bad. That's for sure. Let's see if I can find a different one here. All right, this one might be a little difficult. This quarterback was not a top 5 pick, but he lands near the top of this list as the only quarterback selected within the top 10 of a draft since the NFL-AFL merger that never started a game. Drafted number 6 overall by the Packers in 1981.
Hmm.
This one's tough.
The Packers. 81. So
say it again.
Where did you say he went to school at?
I don't have a list here where he went to school.
Oh.
He played behind Lynn Dickey on the depth chart.
Ouch. Yeah, that's kind of not exactly the kind of stat you want to bust out when you're talking about your career.
They have to have some help from Compadre Tim.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're going to have to kick in something here. You got to give us a hint or something. I got nothing.
Well, I'll go ahead and just tell you guys who it is. Rich Campbell.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. All right. Well, he's a bust, ladies and gentlemen.
I guess, eh?
Apparently so.
Yes.
Did Josh Rosen ever start? Did he ever start a game?
Yeah, I think he did.
He might have with Arizona, maybe.
But I think he ended up being number 11. He wasn't a top 10 player.
Okay.
All right. Here's one. We're going to go back-to-back on the Detroit Lions here. Are you ready? 2002, Lions at number 3 take a quarterback that
Joey
ended up
Harrington.
Being, yeah, and there it is, Joey Harrington. Now, the next year they take at number 2 a wide receiver that's also a bust.
Mike Williams.
No, it's not Mike Williams. It's Tim.
Oh, well, look at you not knowing something. How about that?
It was not Mike Williams in 2003.
Not that I know, but. Because I don't.
Oh, I know who it was. I'm sorry.
Who is
it? Go ahead, Tim.
I have no idea.
Another Michigan State bust, Charles Rogers.
Charles Rogers, Michigan State, correct.
I remember watching him play college football, I believe.
He was
good. Let's just stay on him here for the Lions. Number 7 overall pick, 1990, Heisman Trophy winner, and ended up being not very good.
Andre Ware.
Yeah. Him I remember. Didn't he play for
Houston?
Yeah, Houston.
He did. He went through 5 touchdowns in the NFL, through 44 in college.
That's the year after they took Barry Sanders, I believe. They was expecting big things out of both of them. They only got from one of them, though.
Jeff, you'll know this. I want to see if Tim will figure this one out. Let me ask Tim this one.
Okay.
2015, the Bears take number 7 overall, a wide receiver, and he only caught 25 passes in the NFL, and here were some of the wide receivers drafted behind him. Stephon Diggs, Tyler Lockett, and Devontae Parker. He only had 10 touchdowns, or his senior season, he had 10 touchdowns, 1,447 yards, and 10 touchdowns, and he was the second receiver off the board in 2015.
I'm going to say the reason you're asking me, did he play for Michigan?
He played for West Virginia.
West Virginia.
That's why I knew Jeff would know it immediately.
Oh, okay. I don't, so.
Jeff?
That would be Kevin White.
Kevin White. What a bust he ended up being.
Oh.
Jesus, I've never even heard of
him. Did he get anywhere? I mean, is he being getting, like,
no, he played for Chicago and then that. You know what? I'm going to look up Kevin White. This should be a mystery segment.
Let me look and see if he's on a CFL roster. Nope. Yeah, nope.
He was released by the Bears in 2018 and has since been a member of the Cardinals and 49ers. Let's see here. You signed with the 49ers on August 27, 2020 and was released on September 5th, 2020 and signed to the practice squad the next day. Was elevated to active roster for the team's week 5, 6, and 9 games. He was placed on practice squad COVID-19 list in December and restored to the practice squad, or it was the reserve squad. He signed a reserve future contract on January 4th, 2021.
Still getting paid.
There you go. So good for him. 99, another bad quarterback. Third overall by the Bengals. That's all I'm going to say. Go ahead, Jeff.
I believe Akili Smith.
That is correct. Akili Smith.
That's 99 a whole lot was of not a,
well, I'll tell you what. Donovan McNabb was number two, and then the Browns drafted maybe the bigger bust at number one. Jeff, do you remember?
Tim Couch, maybe?
Tim Couch, out of Kentucky.
Ugh. I think Cade McNown was picked one year by the Bears, either 98 or 99. He was out of UCLA. I think he never did amount to much either. Been a lot of quarterback bust.
Yeah, a lot of. Speaking of quarterback bust, I'm not even going to say the year. I'm just going to give you this. This was this guy's touchdown to interception ratio. He was the number two pick in the draft. 14 touchdowns to 36 interceptions. You that say bust.
That sounds like Ryan Leaf.
Yeah, definitely Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf.
He's got to be right up there with not just a bust, but like disappointment followed by disappointment, followed by more outside of football on top of it all.
Well, don't also forget about one more man, and we all know who I'm talking about here, do we not? Maybe the biggest bust in NFL history. Take a guess.
I thought it was Ryan Leaf.
This one is considered one of the bigger ones, in more ways than one. Well, he was taken number one by the Raiders in 2007. Oh.
Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, wow.
Here's what the little article write-up says.
Chubby boy.
Russell is the prime example as to why you don't draft someone based on a fantastic pro day. The LSU product could throw the ball over a building, but, well, that's about all he could do. Weight issues and work ethic questions were two main factors in him being unable to develop, and he never found a second chance in the NFL.
You know what's really odd about, or strength, you know, not odd, I guess, but Al Davis wanted Russell. Lane Kiffin pleaded with him to take Calvin Johnson in that draft.
Should have listened to him.
And he liked Russell a lot, one of the quarterbacks. He liked his arm.
They could have had Adrian Peterson. They could have had Marshawn Lynch, I think, was in that draft too.
Believe you are right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, well, like I said, he had a howitzer for an arm, but he couldn't do anything else. Like, nothing else.
Here's one that I've never heard this name, but this is interesting here. This guy was a quarterback taken second overall in 1993. He was said by Bill Walsh that he would maybe be the next Joe Montana. Had a great rookie year and outplayed fellow draftmate Drew Bledsoe, the first overall pick in 93. He went number two overall to the Seahawks. Does anybody remember that man?
That would be Rick Meyer.
Rick Meyer is correct.
Yeah, I think he went to Notre Dame, I believe, and they thought he would be the next Montana. They had high hopes, but no, not even close.
Let's go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, was purely based on that he went to Notre Dame and nothing else?
Well, I mean, he had pretty good numbers in college, but they thought I believe, like I said, the Patriots took Bledsoe at one, and then the Seahawks took him at two, and just, you know, didn't amount to much.
Put him on the list.
All right, here's one. And this is an injury downfall of somebody who really could have been something big. Jeff, you'll know this one. Cincinnati Bengals, number one overall selection in 1998. Running back.
Okay. I believe our number one selection at running back was
in 98.
I don't know if Kajana Carter was.
That would be correct.
Okay. I can't remember. Kajana Carter. I thought he was on the. Okay.
Did he play at Penn State?
Penn State?
Yes,
he did.
He did.
Wow. See, I know that, but I don't know who drafted him. Weird.
Of course, the Bengals.
Well, yeah. Here's speaking of another Penn State running back curse. 1998, Chicago Bears, fifth overall pick. Who did they happen to take?
I believe Curtis Enos.
That would be correct.
Oh, Jeff.
What a bust. It's a shame I remember all these guys.
Oh, Jeff.
Fine. I'm just really going through here looking for, all right. See, we talked about him. Okay, Los Angeles Rams, sixth overall pick, 1996. Lawrence Phillips. I didn't even have to give a clue. Jeff knew.
That was just bad. And boy, did he ever turn out to be like a skull.
He committed suicide in prison, I believe.
Yeah, his life went right to not good.
I mean, if you watch the 95 Fiesta Bowl, they wear out, Nebraska wears out Florida, and Tommy Frazier is the quarterback, and Phillips is, I mean, he runs wild on them too. Both of them do, but it's really a shame, as you say, what he's just a big downfall he had.
Well, here's another bust. Tennessee Titans took him eighth overall in 2011 at quarterback. He went behind Blaine Gabbert, who was another bust.
Oh boy.
Was it that guy from Washington, maybe? Or maybe is that later on?
I think you just nailed it. Do you remember his name?
Was it Jake? Jake. So I'm thinking of Jay. For some reason.
From Walker.
What?
Oh, from Washington State?
Jake Walker, yes. Yeah. Washington.
Yep.
Walker, yeah.
That's it. Here's one that always makes me laugh, because I think we could all see this one coming. Cleveland Browns again. In 2012, they take a 28-year-old rookie quarterback in the first round, and they did not look at Russell Wilson. Anybody remember this guy?
Brandon Weeden.
Man, we could all see that coming. We were all like, why would they pick him?
Well, Russell Wilson was the third rounder.
But who was responsible for that pick, and how long was it before they got fired?
I don't know.
Because I don't care. 28-year-old rookies, you don't. Yeah, no.
Chris Winkie,
good Lord. Another brilliant pick.
Yeah.
Here's one, a guy who just couldn't stay in trouble off the field. Wide receiver, fifth overall pick by the Jaguars in 2012.
Justin Blackman.
Man, that dude that was his receiver.
Wow.
And again, let's go back to 1999, the year of bad quarterbacks, the 12th overall pick, and guess who? Chicago Bears take a quarterback who was a lefty from UCLA.
There you go. Cade McNown.
This is just a rogues gallery of losers.
It is. Here's another one from coming out from Denver. They took him late in the draft, 26th overall. He was supposed to be the heir apparent to Peyton Manning. Only a 1-3 QB record as a starter.
Paxton Lynch.
Paxton Lynch is correct.
Okay, well, that's all in the name right there. I mean,
and here was the draft night's. I mentioned this guy last week. 2013 draft, 16th overall pick. He was actually the first quarterback taken off the board in that draft. Like, there were a lot of people waited, and here you come to the Bills in 2013.
E.J. Manuel.
E.J. Manuel. Man, oh, man.
Emmanuel.
Well, just to make everybody feel better, I'm just going through here looking at more. I mean, Brady Quinn's on this list, Jimmy Clausen, Rich Campbell. I mean, just looking at some of these.
Johnny Manziel must be on
there. He was on there. I didn't want to go to him. It's too obvious.
You know what's weird about that pick, though? Is that was a miss at, where did he go, in the 20s? Somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but look at who they picked at 8. That was an even bigger miss.
They took that corner, didn't they?
Yeah, and it's just like nobody ever talks about how horrific that pick turned out.
Actually, he's not bad. He plays for the Steelers now. He actually turned around.
But they took him at 8, dude. 8.
Hayden, Joe Hayden. I think
Joe Hayden?
No. Justin Gilbert.
Justin Gilbert, yeah. That's it.
Justin Gilbert.
Right. And here's one for my Tampa Bay fans out there. The second highest kicker ever taken in an NFL draft, second round, 59th overall pick.
Ricky Aguayo.
Roberto Aguayo.
Whoa, what did you just say?
The second highest.
Roberto. Oh, second highest. I thought you said highest.
No, the highest was Sebastian Janikowski.
Where was he picked at?
First round.
17th pick overall.
Wasn't there a guy back in the 70s that got picked?
Ray Guy was picked by the Raiders as a punter.
No, just a kicker. Steve Little was picked 15th overall.
Oh, I stand corrected then.
In 1978. Hmm. And they said taking a kicker in round one was, you could be forgiven, but then your guy misses 14 to 27.
This is a list of the top 100 busts, and I'm getting flashbacks to some of these names. Christian Hackenberg, which, you know, a lot of these guys aren't. Oh, Darius Hayward Bay, another one. Ron Dane, Tavon Austin, Geno Smith.
Some of them would be such busts that you wouldn't really even know who they were because they busted so bad.
Yeah, Philip Dorsett, Josh Rosen. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks and wide receivers on this list. Byron Leftwich.
Well, I don't think Leftwich was a bust. I mean, he had some injuries, but he had a few good years there.
He did have some good years. I mean, his record's not bad, 24 and 26 overall. He did throw for 10,000 yards.
Just real quick, you talked about Manziel. A good story of that. Dallas had a pick before the Browns, I believe, and Jerry Jones was going to give the pick in.
Yeah, oh yeah, he wanted him, and they switched the pick.
And his son went and just about tackled him picking.
Well, nobody wanted him, and it was a good thing because that didn't work out well.
Well, we'll leave it on this one. Mitch Trubisky was on this list at number 96, and we talked about them last night.
Okay, here's one for you, Nate. If you drafted a quarterback in the first round of the 1983 draft,
yes,
you had a 50% shot at getting a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
Otherwise, you got one of these three guys. Todd Blackledge, Tony Eason, or Ken O'Brien. But you could have had Elway, Jim Kelly, or Dan Marino.
Marino, I think, went last.
He was the last pick of the. He was the last pick of the round.
It just goes to show you know, when you talk about some of these names and stuff. That, I mean, you can, stats only tell you so much. Pro Day only tells you a little bit. Some of it is just, it's a crapshoot. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I think
some
Blackledge carried a lot of weight because Penn State had won the championship the year before, so they based a lot of his success. You know,
well, and Tony Eason, didn't he go to he went to a crappy team from what I remember. But I can't remember who. I wanted to say the Patriots, but I'm not sure if that's right.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I believe that's correct.
I mean, and Ken O'Brien was playing for the Jets, so you can't really blame him.
You know, this has actually been a fun little trip down memory lane. We may have to do this again with NBA draft picks because this has been kind of fun. I like bringing
up these. I believe we should do it with lacrosse.
Oh, God.
And hockey would be just as bad for you guys. And probably me, too, for that matter. So,
well.
Curling, Nate.
Curling, yes. Yes.
Curling house.
Well, we're going to wrap things up tonight. We want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Wide Men Can't Jump. And, Jeff, thank you again, our special guest here this evening, talking all things sports with us, as always. It was good to have you on during this NCAA tournament run.
Well, it's been real. It's been fun, and it's been real fun.
Well, there you go.
I just got to throw this out here for Bogus. Bears first-round running back picks. Check this list out of
Cedric nobody. Benson.
Cedric Benson, Curtis Enos, Rasham Salaam, and Brad Muster.
Former Heisman winner, Salaam.
That's a fourth and a fifth pick, a 21st and a 23rd, and they all missed.
Running backs in the first, a lot of people usually do.
Sorry, Bogus. Enjoy your new quarterback there, Ed.
Yeah, Andy Dalton. The fact that it's 2021, they need another tight end, don't they? They've only got about six.
They never have too many of those.
They have a good running game, though. I like Tariq Cohen. He's a good back. That's something that they can build on. But they've had good backs in the past. Like Matt Forte was a solid back. And who was it they had before him? I thought they had another good back there for a minute. Jordan Howard wasn't much, but I did like Forte. He was a PPR machine in fantasy football.
He was.
Yeah, I loved him.
Anthony Thomas wasn't bad there. He had a couple of good years. But you could almost put him – he barely isn't a bust, I guess. You could say kind of like Leftwich.
Yeah, I don't consider Leftwich that big of a bust. He won a championship as an offensive coordinator.
There you go.
Right, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
It was him, not Tom Brady, right?
That's right, baby.
Unless we're talking
all of them. It was a group effort.
Yeah, unless we're talking about Tom Brady, in which case it was all Tom Brady.
It's all Tom Brady. You know that. All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Wide Men Can't Jump. We'll be back next week with another episode of Wide Men Can't Jump, talking more hoops, more football, and probably ignoring baseball altogether.
We're going to be prickless next week.
So it seems.
Enjoy the Masters.
Yes, do enjoy the Masters. Get out, have some fun, enjoy the nice weather. And, you know, we really got to think of a way to end the shows from now on, but we're not doing a good job at that. So in the meantime and in between time, Tim, send us home.
Goodbye. All right, anyway, I don't know. I'm at home. I can't be sent home, and so are you.
We're all at home.
That's just crazy talk. Well, Jeff's not. He's at Magic City.
He's at an undisclosed location from parts unknown.
Yeah.
You have to cross Dudleyville to get to parts unknown. It's kind of crazy.
Williams.
Lou Will just passed Jeff a wing, so we got to go.
Oh, geez. He wants Jeff to pay. Run. Everybody run.
Run, Jeff. He's run up a tab. All right, that'll do it for this week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Have a good one. Thanks for listening to Wide Men Can't Jump on the Wide Men Radio Network, located at anchor.fm/WMCJ. Check us out there and download our podcast directly from Anchor or subscribe on one of the many platforms where we're located, including iTunes, Spotify, and more. Thanks to our great sponsors for making this program possible, New Taylor & Associates at newlawoffice.com, Atomic Comics & Collectibles LLC, located at facebook.com/AtomicComicsAndCollectiblesLLC, Strip Cam Fun at stripcamfun.com, as well as Stay Classy Meats, located at stayclassymeats.com. Use our promo code WIDEMEN and save 10% on your order. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Talk with Nate and Tim. And we hope you come back and join us again for our next episode at the same spot you found it last time. Thanks again to the wonderful Horse Burner for providing our intro song, as well as all the other content they bring out. Check them out on YouTube, iTunes, Apple Music, and Spotify. Thanks again for listening to Wide Men Can't Jump. We hope to see you back next time for
For Tim, this is Nate saying so long for now, and we'll see you again on the next edition of White Men Can't Jump.